baseball really kind of took over the evening, Marcus. I mean, and it was a heck of a game, Japan beating Mexico 6-5, and you got this Murakami who I was not familiar with, but they said in high school they called him the Japanese Babe Ruth, and he's already won a couple of home run titles and triple crown in Japan, struggled big time with 11 strikeouts in this World Baseball Classic, 4-for-21, even struck out his first three times last night. Said he was struggling so much he thought about bunting, and the manager told him to hit away, and he slams one off the center field wall, two-run walk-off shot. But, Marcus, what do you think?
Well, I think it's been a huge year for the World Baseball Classic is that they've had great crowds. It's been a very good atmosphere, and I think it's hard for people not to get involved in it when the players are there and the atmosphere is so good. If you play in a stadium and there's not that many people there, I think it just doesn't have as much meaning. But the TV coverage of it's been excellent. I think the baseball's been pretty good for the most part. It's been certainly exciting. Last night's game was incredibly exciting. So Jim said he played with his father in Japan. So that's pretty cool. But yep. The United States tonight and Japan should be a really good game. I worry about what it takes out of these players to have to go play in something like this, you know, during spring training. But it's been really fun to watch.
Now, this isn't like the College World Series. The U.S. doesn't have to beat Japan twice, right? It resets now.
Just it's one game, right?
One game.
Okay. Yeah, this is it. Just,
I believe.
Just one game. Even though Japan is undefeated, U.S. has lost once, but it's just one game tonight, 6 o'clock on Fox Sports 1. Yeah, like Mark said, Brad, what really gets me excited is when you see, like, Shohei Ohtani. So he opens the bottom of the ninth with a shot in the gap to right center field. He gets to second base. He's showing enthusiasm, emotion that I've never seen from him, you know? So he's fired up. His teammates are fired up. Heck, in the post game with Big Poppy and A-Rod, they're fired up about it. It's like this manager Mexico said, Benji Gill said, Japan advances, but the world of baseball won tonight. And that's kind of the feeling that you had, right?
Well, let's be completely honest. You've never seen that out of Shohei because he plays for the Angels. When are you going to see that?
That's a good point.
Put him on a team that's competitive, and you probably see that all the time. I mean, that's one of the things people love about that guy is the spark that he brings to the game. But no, I totally agree. I think that anything that elevates a sport the way that this has is good. I think that for whatever reason, I've known about the World Baseball Classic. I've not followed it that closely. For whatever reason this year, maybe because the U.S. has played well, but there have been other teams that have played really well. It seems to have been elevated in profile this year, and I think it's been really good for the sport of baseball.
Yeah, Marcus, I mean, you look at how exciting, and we've talked about what baseball means, especially like in, I went to Puerto Rico 9 years in a row, and I watched some of the Caribbean World Series, and when you get Puerto Rico matched up with the Dominican or all these different countries down there, I mean, that baseball means so much to those Latin American countries. And so, and I tell you what, it meant a lot to me last night in the post game. You could see A-Rod. I mean, he's dead serious and he's giving it up to Mexico and the heart that Mexico showed, you know, in this tournament. And yeah, they lost last night 6-5, but you know, how they battled. And then for Ohtani, like Brad says, Ohtani, he hadn't got to play that many meaningful games, you know, for the Angels, especially, I mean, like postseason games. And so, he's really getting into this, and so it sets up a matchup that we could have tonight with Ohtani going up against Mike Trout. Now, Ohtani is not going to be the starting pitcher, but they said there's a good chance that he comes in relief tonight. And so I guess they're going to go with Darvish maybe in the middle innings tonight. It's is it Imanaga, Mark? Is that how you pronounce his first name? Shote Imanaga, anyway, their starter. And then they said they're probably going to go with Yu Darvish in the middle innings, but a good chance that we could see Shohei Ohtani, which he's not used to coming out of the bullpen, and he said he's still going to be the DH, and so he's got to find a way how to get warm with all his DH duties. And if he does come pitching this game, but that would be quite a matchup to have Ohtani going up against Mike Trout, with the World Baseball Classic on the line, right?
No, that would be incredible. And somebody and guarantees that somebody wins on that wretched team of the Angels.
I think I read this morning that this would be the first time that Ohtani's come on in relief in like 3 years, 3 or 4 years.
That's interesting. Well, anyway, Matt, Matt weighed in a little earlier, but Matt, any more comments on the WBC?
Well, I think it's a fantastic event. Like I said, I don't know that there is just a great time to have this event. Now, frankly, I part of me thinks these guys ought to be getting ready for the regular season in Major League Baseball or, the KBO or whatever, Japan or wherever. So I do worry, but on the other hand, though, guys can get hurt in spring training games. I mean, that can happen. Major League Baseball is not going to shut down for 2 or 3 weeks in the summer, so you're not going to have it in the summer. And I don't think you definitely don't want this event like after the regular season of Major League Baseball because, A, the players at that point are ready for the off season. B, you're not going to go against football. So it's unfortunate that, to me, there's just not an ideal time to have this event. But if you take the time to – if you're a baseball fan, you ought to check it out. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I've watched every single pitch because we've got, NBA, NCAA tournament, all that. But – It's exciting stuff, man. It really is.
If the concern is guys getting hurt, that's never going to go away.
Never.
That's going to be an issue.
Correct.
If they played it in December.
Yes.
Your point about the NFL is in crunch time then, so it still would be distraction. But you're still going to have guys concerned about getting hurt. And there was that – it was Edwin Diaz. Is that the guy's name that hurt himself? He's going to be out for the entire year. The embarrassing part about that is it was during a celebration. He didn't get hurt during the game. But – that's going to be a problem. I just think it's good. I don't think for baseball, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think for baseball guys being gone and playing in this thing is quite the same as Aaron Rodgers not going to off-season training and working with his receivers.
Oh, not at all. It's totally apples and oranges.
And so I think that in terms of that, guys aren't with their teammates for the time that they're playing in the World Baseball Classic, but I still think they're getting the work in, they're getting real competition, and in some ways, maybe it gives you a chance to evaluate talent that you otherwise might not if some of these guys were in your spring training games. So I wish there was a better time to play it. I just don't know when it would be, and I think they've sort of reached the place that is as good as it can be.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say is, we talk about this all the time, for a sport like Major League Baseball that, putting it mildly, has struggled to market itself. Anything and everything they can do to bring attention to the sport of baseball, to bring excitement around the baseball, anything they can do, I think is a positive. So I love it. And I like the fact it's not every year. It adds some speciality to it. If things like the Olympics or I know it goes back and forth between Ryder Cup, President's Cup. But, I mean, if events like that were every single year, they may not be as special. So I think it's fantastic.
So you had Mexico upset Puerto Rico on Friday. You had the USA with the grand slam from Trey Turner that put them ahead of Venezuela on Saturday and saved them there. Then the USA just rolled over Cuba 14-2. Trey Turner hit a pair of home runs, drove in four runs on Sunday, and that's their number nine hitter. But anyway, no, it's been great stuff. Sold out crowds. Players are into it.
Fired up crowds.
Sold up, fired up.
Yeah.
Fired up players, broadcasters. It's all been good, and it ends with Japan against the USA tonight, 6 o'clock. So you can definitely tune in on that one. Marcus, did you watch any the women's basketball last night? Obviously, OU was the late game against UCLA. But we saw some good ones with Miami taking out a number one seed in Indiana with a last-second shot. Ohio State had a shot with 1.8 to go, 2-point win over North Carolina. Then we had some blowouts by UConn. Texas got blown out at home, as Pat was talking about, with Louisville. And then the Sooners, Mark, battled from 18 down, had a 4-point lead, and then lost to UCLA. What are your thoughts?
Well, you turned it over way too much in the beginning of the game and then got down. They got doubled up early on and then kind of made a little bit of a rally and steadied themselves and got back into the contest. So I'm not a very good judge of the OU women's basketball team this year because the times that I've seen them, they just haven't played very well. I watched some of their game at Texas. I went to the game at home against Texas. I saw this last night, and you know, Jenny Bronchick's done a really, really nice job. But they're going to have to, I think, going to have to get some better players if they want to kind of go past where they are right now. The Big 12 women's side is a little bit opposite of the men's side, that it's not as tough as it's, you know what I'm saying? There's not, they didn't receive a whole lot of respect in the seeding.
Well, Baylor's not nearly as good. I mean, you don't have the kingpin that in past years has just been dominant, you know?
It's been pretty good, too, but there's no more teams alive, right? They're going to Sweet
16. No more. First time the Big 12 has not had a team advance to the Sweet 16. They had six teams make the field. Texas, Baylor, OU all lost on Monday. Yeah.
So that's not
Baylor.
Great.
Baylor lost to UConn. Texas got blown out at home by Louisville, and OU lost 82-73 to UCLA. So now UCLA moves on, and they're going to play South Carolina, the number one seed. So they got their work cut out there.
Yeah, I mean,
they played them earlier in the year to like a 9-point game. UCLA did, but they had the one girl last night that was just on fire. She couldn't miss.
You want to win and move on. You want to go to as many games as you can, but let's face it, they were playing to have to go face off against South Carolina, who's just red hot.
And like Mark said, though, that game earlier, it was tied at the start of the fourth quarter way back on November the 29th, and South Carolina won the game. And so, I mean, obviously, I mean, South Carolina, UConn, I mean, they've been good for years. We were talking earlier, guys, that I mean, love him or hate him, on Gino Auriemma, this is their, 29th straight Sweet 16 appearance, 30th overall. They're the second program in the women's tournament history with 30 Sweet 16 appearances. Tennessee is the other one with 35, had the great run with Pat Summitt. But anyway, so you got that going on. We'll talk more about the men's as we head into Thursday night, but also college basketball-wise, just real quick, guys, Rick Pitino, Marcus, any thoughts on six-year deal with St. John's?
Well, I guess if he's rehabilitated after a year at Iona, or a couple of years there, there's not a whole lot, you know, some of the things that Pitino has been accused of. I still think, you know, hiring prostitutes for players is not part of the NIL. So he still has maybe some stuff to atone for that. But
according to him, he was completely vindicated.
He was cleared, yeah.
We had a conversation last week.
I'm not saying you're wrong, Marcus. I'm just saying, you know, that's the reason he's coaching again.
It's just like the movie A Few Good Men. They're trying to figure out who ordered the code red on that, okay? I'm pretty sure that Colonel Jessup and Rick Pitino faced the type of interrogation from Tom Cruise that he would have admitted to knowing what happened there. But
we had a conversation last week or the week before about Jim Boeheim and how that era of coaches is sort of aging out now. And this retread of Rick Pitino, and I know, you know, his pedigree is what it is, but he's 70 years old, and I read an interesting piece, I don't know if it was Sports Illustrated, last night, talking about how he's just always chasing that next pot of gold. He's not a guy that's ever been happy to stay anywhere, and then when he has, he's sort of worn out his welcome. I just wonder how much longer will people continue to pay Rick Pitino. His time at Iona was successful, but if you look at the statistics versus or based on the coach that was there prior to him, they weren't that much different. That was a program that had already stepped it up a level from where they had previously been. Now there's talk that Fairleigh Dickinson's coach is going to wind up being the favorite for that Iona job now that Pitino's gone.
Interesting. And Pat was saying Mike Bray is being hired, I guess, at South Florida. And then Ed Cooley is going from Providence to Georgetown. And we were just talking, guys, it's hard to believe where that Georgetown program, I mean, under Patrick Ewing, and they lose 29 conference games in a row, 13 and 50 over the last two seasons for Patrick Ewing. So he's out, and Ed Cooley is in there. At Georgetown. Okay, busy night in the NBA.
Pitino, though, I think they're desperate for a winner at St. John's. I think they're desperate for a winner at Georgetown, too. I think both guys should do pretty well. And if you've seen that Eddie Lampkin, the TCU center, who was kind of in and out of the lineup a lot, I think he's got potential, more potential than he displayed at TCU. They could have used him in the tournament, but he's already committed to Georgetown.
Okay, and who obviously had the comments on social media, which got him the exit from TCU. Yeah, they definitely could have used him inside, no question, in the tournament.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL Fan Festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Busy night last night in the NBA, guys. Let's start with the Chicago Bulls. I admit they've kind of been under my radar, but I didn't realize that now they've won three in a row, five out of six, as they're fighting just to get into the play-in. And right now they're into the number 10 spot, Marcus, in the East. But this game last night was really one of the crazier games all year long. Double overtime special, some great individual performances, where Zach LaVine had 26, DeMar DeRozan had 25, Vukovic had 21 points and 12 rebounds. And so the Bulls are surging. On the Philly side of things, Embiid had 37 points, 16 rebounds, 3 blocks, but the only problem is he fouled out of the game with 3:54 left in the second overtime. But Embiid now, guys, has had 10 straight games where he scored at least 30 points. So he's on an incredible run. But he wasn't there. They had a four-point lead in the second overtime, but he was on the bench, and they didn't score after 2:36 left in the second overtime, and Chicago gets the win. But any thoughts on that one, Marcus?
Well, it's just a great game. And, yeah, you're right. Chicago has been – I don't think they're making any noise, you know what I'm saying, other than get into the bottom of the playoffs and bow out. But that was a tough loss for Philly, who's – you know, I think it means a lot to them whether or not that they're – second or third in the East and potentially first, depending on how hot they could get, you know, down the stretch.
Chicago is like one of the better vehicles at pull apart. Like, you could just almost drive it. It's got a lot of really good usable parts on it, but it's not quite street worthy. They may get into the playoffs, but I don't expect them to do much. Here's the thing that I took away from that game last night. It was a weird night in the NBA in general, but James Harden has got to be more consistent. Across the board, his numbers are decent, and he had a bunch of assists last night, but he was awful shooting from the floor. And Philadelphia, as good as Embiid is, he's not going to be able to carry that team all the way. And so Harden's got to step it up. I mean, he came in, he's been healthier, he's had a better attitude this year, he's played well through most of the season. I don't know if he's coasting towards the playoffs. I think if he is, it's a mistake, because they're still sort of in a battle in the East for positioning. But Harden's got to play more consistently.
No, I agree, Brad. I mean, 5 points, and it was we were saying it was probably the worst game he's played in Philly since he joined him.
I think that's 14, probably true.
Yeah, 2 for 14 from the field, missed all 6 threes, and he had 5 turnovers, only scored 5 points. But in his defense, I think he has been pretty consistent all year. I mean, his efficiency, he hadn't been taking a whole bunch of bad shots. He's, you know, deferred to Embiid. His assist numbers have been great. His percentages have been pretty good. I don't know. It's just one. I look at this as being a one-off, just a bad night for James Harden. But that's probably why they lost the game. You're right about that, Brent. And he's got to play better. But back to Mark's point, I mean, the Sixers, with that loss, now the Celtics are back in the second spot, 2.5 behind the Bucks. Sixers a half game behind the Celtics, so that's the battle to look at down the stretch. But Embiid, individually, and Doc Rivers talked about this individual the MVP battle, and what Doc was saying, can we stop trying to put people down? I mean, you know, you don't need to tear someone down just to try to elevate the guy that you want to win MVP. They're all really good. Jokic's having a great year. So is Embiid. So is Giannis. So that'll be an interesting race in itself down the stretch. The guy that had the best night last night, Marcus, Julius Randle, career high 57 in the Garden, but they lose to Minnesota, which hurts the Thunder, right, Mark?
Yeah, Minnesota hadn't been performing very well, but that was a good win for them to kind of get one back. But 57 points, it's a good night. Taurean Prince had 35. That's way more than I thought. With now that on back-to-back nights, you had Austin Reeves and Taurean Prince score 35. That's a great homage to the Big 12.
I think I saw this morning that maybe it's one game away from being a record-setting year in terms of 50-point games in the season in the NBA.
Wow.
If it's not number one overall, it's number one since way, way back in the early days of the NBA. That scoring is up significantly, and there have been that many 50-point-plus games this year.
All the scoring records are falling, yeah. And back to Taurean Prince, Marcus, 12 out of 13 and 8 for 8 from 3. I mean, can you have a more efficient 35-point performance than Taurean Prince did in that one? But not a lot of defense. To Brad's point, 140 to 134 in that one, another shootout in the NBA. And, guys, the Golden State Warriors finally end that 11-game road losing streak. They did it in Houston, so not a surprise that they beat the 18-54 Houston Rockets. But how they did it, they had to do it with the 37-point fourth quarter, finally pulled away and won by 13, but there were 13 lead changes and ties. This game was up for grabs into the fourth quarter, but Golden State got it done, Marcus.
You know, that's just typical of this team, is that they're waiting until the very, very last minute to wake up. I can't believe that Oklahoma City is right there next to the Warriors in the, you know, in the playoff chase right now. But they had to win that game last night. Line kind of reflected that they would, but being favored by 11 points, and they even got the cover on that. So still the big question is, what can this team do in the playoffs when it gets motivated or, you know, having to try to play good basketball?
Jordan Poole only 1 for 8, 1 for 6 from 3. He didn't do much in this one, but Stephen Clay scored 59. Now, I wouldn't say that they were at their best. You know, Steph 5 for 15, Clay 5 for 13 from 3, but they got it done at crunch time. It was a much-needed win. To sit there in game 73, and this put them over 500 for the season. It's been that kind of season for Golden State. It moves them to 8-29 now on the road. And, Marcus, then we get to your man Dylan Brooks. What are your thoughts on his night at home against the Mavs? They did get the win last night. So, guys, for one thing, Memphis has now won 6 out of their last 7 without Ja Morant.
Okay, I was looking back at the Thunder and Clippers games from earlier this season. That was the end of October. And so much has changed in the NBA since the end of October, especially in the Thunder and Clippers matchups. But, you know, that's kind of when we thought the Grizzlies were kind of a lovable up-and-coming team that, you know, really, really was a good story. The NBA might win the West. But that's been somewhat team turmoil this year, and it's a bad sign for their arc. If you know what I'm trying to say is that with Dylan Brooks kind of trying to be kind of somebody that he's not, Ja Morant last night, you know, what he said after the game, not even that big a deal. We're going to overanalyze everything he says. I think trying to come back, whether he can stay on the right path and not kind of go down this road of where the off-the-court stuff is more important to him than what happens on the floor. But, yeah, they are playing better. Steven Adams is back, and I think no matter what we say about the Grizzlies, it all matters about we just didn't understand how much rebounding they lost with Brandon Clark and Steven Adams out at the same time. And now that Adams is back, they're starting to play better.
But he didn't play in the game last night. I mean,
I thought Adams did play last night.
No, he didn't.
No, he was out. No,
my bad.
Yep. But anyway, they did get Jaren Jackson had 28 points, Brad. Aldama had 22 and 14 off the bench is really, you know, maybe the reason that they won the game. Tyus Jones has played very well in the absence of Ja Morant. But this was a crazy game last night where you know, the Mavs had a 16-point lead in this game and let it get away, and the Grizz come back and walk away with the victory, because Dallas is also sitting right there. Dallas is 36-36 right now after the loss last night. So Dallas is only a half game ahead of Minnesota and the Thunder and the Utah Jazz, Brad. It's
injuries,
all bunched up.
Injuries and absences are a big story in the NBA, yep, and particularly in the West this season. And right now, you know, you're talking about Golden State. Golden State is really missing Wiggins. And we don't know yet whether he's going to – there's some speculation. There were some rumors out over the weekend. Right. But those were somewhat rebutted, but I don't know if they were completely unverified, that it looks like he may not be back even if they go to the postseason. Steven Adams missing for the Grizzlies is bad enough. You add Ja Morant to that, although he's supposed to come back tomorrow night. I think they're expecting him to play on Wednesday night. Durant with the Suns after he went over and suffered that freak injury. You got Luka out in Dallas. There are so many players. Zion in New Orleans, although, I mean, New Orleans is kind of a team that it's the rarity that they have Zion, not the other way around at this point. But injuries and absences are a huge story, and whoever is able to fix those issues is going to wind up the beneficiary of it. And the Clippers, meanwhile, continue to kind of clip along, if you'll pardon the expression. I still think that Golden State can do it. Perk was saying something interesting yesterday on ESPN yesterday morning about how part of the reason that a team, especially at this point in the level of success that the Warriors have had, but sometimes even just repeating after 1 year of winning a championship, you're not as hungry, and without that hunger, it's almost like an Eye of the Tiger Rocky III thing, where the camaraderie of the team is not quite there. They're not hanging out with each other as much. There's not that fellowship among the players, and he thinks that that is a big part of what's going on with Golden State. I'm not going to say that he's wrong. I think a big part of what's going on with Golden State is they're terrible on the road and they need Wiggins. But it does make some sense that missing that piece of the puzzle, and then those guys, if it's easier for them just to go home and do whatever than it is to hang around with each other, I think that does take away a little bit from their success. But I think that the team that stays healthiest is going to be the team that you're going to have to watch out for in the West.
Okay, one guy that is going to be missing tomorrow night is Dylan Brooks. Now, it's only Houston coming to town. Maybe the guy's brilliant, and that's why he's going to take his one-game suspension against Houston, Marcus. But for the second time this month, he does face the automatic one-game suspension for his technical foul number. He's up to 18, which you get the one-game suspension on number 16, then every two after that. So
if he was 18, brilliant, I'd say he'd have a better line than 9-4-5.
Very good, Brad. Thank you. But, Mark, what are your thoughts on the night of Dylan Brooks, who Kyrie, after the game, refused to trade jerseys with him?
Yeah, it looked like he was going to trade jerseys. I think it's that Dylan Brooks has just reached this point where he's completely oblivious of who he really is. He's bought into some of the hype and doesn't understand that he's a mid- to low-level NBA player that can play some good defense at times, can get hot like a lot of other guys, but thinks that, you know, most of the shots are going in when they really aren't. It's a bad sign for the Grizzlies in the playoffs. It's just really, I don't know. They're a team that's absolutely ripe for a first-round bouncing.
And he's involved in this battle with Theo Pinson, this guy on the Mavs bench, and he's trying to make fun of him and you know, wave the pom-poms like Pinson is just a cheerleader and so forth. And he gets himself suspended for a game. Did you see his quote after the game where he was talking about Kyrie, and it didn't bother him that Kyrie refused to trade jerseys, but he said he vowed to sign Irving's jersey himself and hang it on the wall. He said, "I'm a fan of Kyrie for everything that he stands for, the way that he uses his platform, his basketball game." He goes, "When you're growing up, you want to aspire to be able to do what he does. He's just like Kobe. He's just like Jordan, those guys. He plays the game at a different pace, uses both hands, mid-range god. And that's where I want to be at one day when I'm able to shoot the ball more."
Good grief. I mean, I don't know where he's going to be able to shoot the ball more, but man.
You know, in the online culture, and I don't know much about Mariah Carey, but what I do know is, like, one of the biggest slams is apparently she said about J-Lo, "I don't know her." That you had the sports equivalent of that last night when Dylan Brooks gave Kyrie his jersey and Kyrie just walked on by, didn't take Dylan's jersey back from him. He's tried to rectify it after the game and said, no, I was just on to the next thing. I'll probably take care of it next time. But it was perfect for Dylan Brooks because it was one of the most embarrassing things. He takes his jersey off, holds it out, and Kyrie just keeps walking.
Well, he also stepped on, Kyrie's foot. Now, Kyrie didn't think that he did it on purpose or anything. He didn't hold it against him. But, Kyrie had a tough time last night, too. 10 for 24, only 2 for 9 from 3. He did have 28 points. But like you said, Brad, Dallas playing without Luka. So that's also the big story there. And then, guys, we got to mention the Utah Jazz. They just will not go away. It was Agbaji, the former Kansas player, had his career high with 27 last night. He knocked down 6 threes. And they went at home against Sacramento, had a 25-point lead, almost blew it in that game. The Kings almost had a great comeback. But the Jazz get the victory, Marcus. They're sitting there at 35 and 36 with the Thunder.
Once you count them out, they keep winning games. Their schedule is not too difficult either. I would say the Jazz coming down the stretch did all the math on this not too long ago that they're absolutely in this, and everything depends on for Oklahoma City what happens over the next four games.
That's another team that Markkanen and Sexton didn't play in that game last night, and the Jazz still got away with a win over Sacramento, no less.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. Clarkson, Markkanen, Sexton, all did not play for the Jazz, and they still get the victory over the Kings. De'Aaron Fox had 37 for the Kings. Keegan Murray good, but not good enough.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Cam Newton taking part at the Auburn Pro Day today. This is 11 or more than 12 years after he threw at their Pro Day leading up to the 2011 draft. Guys, you think Cam Newton's going to have a spot in the NFL, be on a roster this next season?
No, I do not. I don't think so.
It would depend on what he's willing to play for, but I don't think he's a starter anywhere at this point. And would he be willing to play for the amount of money and to be the backup? That's the big question, because I think there are teams out there that are crazy enough and hurting for a quarterback enough that they might sign him. But based on the last couple of stops during his career, there's not a whole lot left there. Surely talent scouts are able to figure that out.
In the last couple of stops, 2020 with the Patriots, he goes 7-8, but only 8 touchdown passes, 10 picks after winning his first start with New England. That was 2020. All right. So he re-signed after the season, but they released him at the end of training camp because they went with Mac Jones. And then Carolina did pick him up for the last 8 games of the 2021 season after they signed him in November of that season when Sam Darnold got placed on injured reserve with a shoulder injury. So he's going to turn 34 in May, and I think you're both right. I mean, it wouldn't be much money if some team has him as a backup. And the other question is, does a team want to have him as a backup instead of, bringing on a young player that they can train and give some time to. So anyway, but he is throwing today at the Auburn Pro Day. NFL-wise, Roger Goodell looks like he's going to sign another extension, guys. Any problem with that?
No problem at all. I think he's done a really good job. He has to answer for the owners. That's incredibly difficult to do, I think, in a lot of situations. And again, he just does what the owners expect him to do. So I think that he's done a really nice job.
I heard you and Pat talking about this in the final segment today of you guys together. And I think Roger Goodell gets a lot of credit. It's sort of like they say the quarterback gets too much credit and he gets too much blame. I think Roger Goodell gets a lot of credit for things that it's not really because of Roger Goodell. The money, the success of the sport. I don't think those things are because Roger Goodell is the commissioner, but he does not get in the way of the success of the sport. There have been plenty of things that I've taken issue with the way that he's handled, but the sport is very successful. The owners, I mean, look at the way they do everything else. The last thing we want to do is rock the boat anywhere. And so they're obviously going to re-sign him and keep him around.
Yeah, Adam Schefter said the last team to sell before he took over in 2006 was the Minnesota Vikings, and the Vikings sold at that time for $600 million. All right, that was the last team to sell before 2006. Well, the Denver Broncos sold for more than $4.5 billion with a B last year. So, like, yeah, the owners are making a lot of money, so they don't want to rock the boat, right?
Here's the thing with that, though, Craig. The same thing is happening in the NBA. I mean, we were talking about the numbers on this Charlotte thing, and the numbers are very comparable. Michael Jordan paid $275 million, and they're valued at – well, no, not their value. The Phoenix Suns sold for $4 billion. So it's just the finances of sport. And I'll tell you this. If I'm Michael Jordan – I'm cashing out now while I can and taking all that, because who knows where the economy goes over the next 5 years. And you're either in for the long haul or you take your money and get out. But
it's not because of Goodell, right?
That being said, he's not gotten in the way of the success of the league. And so because of that, I think the owners want to keep him around.
Did you see Colin Cowherd say that Michael Jordan's basically a failure at everything that he's ever done besides play basketball?
No.
I mean, that's a death wish.
If making $3.5 billion profit on a $275,000 or $275 million investment is a failure, then I would love to be a failure.
That almost makes me think that Colin Cowherd's career is about to go down the drain. If that is what he can come up with, if that is the hottest of the hot takes I've ever heard, that is absurd. That is just ridiculous.
I think it is accurate to say he's a failure as an NBA executive. As far as, you know, having success, having team success, obviously that would be true. But to say, I mean, you know, obviously he's made a ton of money outside of what he did on the basketball court, right, Marcus? I mean, so, no, I wouldn't call him.
Yeah, the dude absolutely knows what he's doing. I mean, Cowherd's on there now talking about that movie, which I heard got a just rousing ovation at South by Southwest when it premiered, the movie about the Air Jordan shoes. I mean, yeah, and Michael's in plenty of good company with players that tried to be executives and were miserable failures. The successful players, it's almost like there's an equivalency of the more successful you were as a player, the less successful you can be as an executive. It just doesn't – I don't think they are steeped in reality the way that some guys that were really boots-on-the-ground guys their whole career understand the nuance of the way the business works. But, I mean, look at all the guys that have tried to be NBA executives and have failed at it.
But as far as making money, Brad, for for them and what he's going to sell them for, like you say, he's going to walk away from there.
If that's the mark of a failure, I would love to be that kind of failure.
Yeah, on the court, maybe no success, but as a businessman, great success, right? player movement, guys. Marcus, Texans add tight end Dalton Schultz and Devin Singletary, the running back from the Bills. Schultz, of course, from Matt's Cowboys. What do you think?
Well, I think that the tight end for the Texans has caught some touchdown passes in the last few years. Schultz ought to be pretty good, but it'll be a rookie quarterback, which I don't think is necessarily very good for the tight end. I always was a little bit underwhelmed by Devin Singletary. Just thought he was kind of another guy in the league, so I wouldn't have paid a premium for him. I'd have looked at really trying to go deep into the kind of the free agent, non-drafted rookie running back market. So I'm skeptical of anything that the Texans do.
And Brad, the Bills, one of the complaints I had against the Bills is not being able to run the ball with the tailback, and especially like in short yardage situations, they're depending on Josh Allen too much. So they did pick up Damian Harris. He had been beaten out by Ramondre Stevenson with the Patriots last year, basically became the number one Patriot running back. So what do you think about picking up a big guy like Damian Harris? Because the other backs, that they have, you know, James Cook, Nyheim Hines, I mean, are smaller guys, Brad.
That was their Achilles heel when it came to the end of the season and their exit in the playoffs, is they just couldn't move the ball on the ground without Josh Allen. And it's asking too much of him, both health-wise and in controlling a game to do that. I mean, we'll see what the guy looks like. They definitely need to address the running back situation. I don't know that that guy is the answer. I don't know that we know enough about him yet to know whether he can be the answer, but I applaud the fact that they see the problem and they're trying to fix it.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So I mean, that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.